Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.
Now, delighted to be joined for the Culture Club today by Louise Neelan, and her book, Snowflake, has been picked for the One City, One Book initiative by Dublin City Council. Congratulations, Louise, on that, because very good books get selected for that honour. What is it going to mean to you, do you reckon?
Oh, thanks a million for having me, first of all, Matt. It's a pleasure to be here. It means an awful lot. My book came out in 2021. And how I found out about getting the One Dublin, One Book was I got an email into my inbox from Dublin City Council, and I thought I forgot to pay a parking fine. So I thought I was in trouble. And then when they were asking for a Zoom, I was like, oh, it might be something to do with the book. And they told me I was on a shortlist, and I was delighted with that. Because when you're a debut writer, you don't expect, you expect your moment in the sun, and the book had been disappearing from the shelves. So to get this another boost and to introduce more readers to the book,
we'll give it a push, not just in Ireland, but I think, but internationally as well.
I've been really lucky with international sales as well. Like the book has been published in America and has been translated into different languages, and it's a real great thing that a book that I wrote that's set down the road for me is making an impact.
And tell us about the book. What's it all about?
So the book is called Snowflake. It's about an 18-year-old called Debbie who grew up in a rural farm in Kildare. Debbie has a mother called Maeve who believes that she's able to dream other people's dreams. She also has an uncle, Billy, who lives in a caravan in a field out the back of their house. And Billy kind of assures her that her mother's mad, not to mind her, and to go to university, get an education, and get out really of their small rural life. And so Debbie is pulled each direction when she goes to college, and she starts also having strange dreams. So yeah, that's the book in a nutshell.
Okay, where did that all come from? It's not autobiographical in any way, is it?
No, I mean, like, I always get asked about how much the book is autobiographical because
you are from Kildare, isn't it?
I'm from a rural part of Kildare, grew up in a dairy farm, went to Trinity, all the things that Debbie does. And I suppose where we differ is that we have very different home lives. Debbie is an only child. She doesn't know who her dad is. And like, I don't have an uncle who lives in a caravan out the back of my garden, and I don't have a mother who dances naked in nettles as well, thank Christ. It's always a pleasure to introduce people to my mum at literary events because they're expecting me
something different.
It's quite mad in the book, and my mum's very much not like that. I suppose like with how much of fiction is autobiographical? All of the like thoughts and anxieties I had as a teenager going to Dublin for the first time are in there. But the great thing about fiction is that it's a neutral kind of space to explore it. Like none of the characters in Snowflake are based on real people. Like they all exist independently in a kind of like parallel universe, and that's the great thing about fiction.
Will this also give you a boost for future novels with publishers, the fact that you have been selected for the One City, One Book Award in Dublin?
Absolutely, yeah, I think so. I mean, my publishers have been really supportive. I've a great agent. I signed a two-book deal, so I'm writing my second book at the minute, but they've been very patient with the delivery on the second manuscript. They've given me a lot of time, so I'm really grateful for that. And you hear all sorts of scary things about the publishing industry, but I've been really lucky so far.
Is it difficult, though, to write the second novel after the first one published? You know, they say in music, the difficult second album. Is it difficult to go and then try and, not replicate, but, you know, get something that's good enough again to be published?
Oh, it's a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. I find it really difficult because when I wrote Snowflake, I had the privilege of not thinking anyone would read it. And when you publish a book, you don't expect to become so self-conscious. Like, I never thought I'd be sitting here talking to you about all my favourite stuff. And in a way, like, it's great to be able to get the opportunity to do this. But it's also a completely different skill set. My job it basically is to sit in a room in my pajamas and work with invisible friends. And it's a very weird thing to be kind of brought out of it. I think the thing that I'm finding most difficult about this month and doing events is putting makeup on every day and, you know, presenting myself to the world as a real person, because I'm used to going around in my pajamas and just, you know, kind of living on the page. It's different.
Well, thank you for taking the time to put together the Culture Club choices. We always start with, well, it's a question, I suppose, that only works for certain generations, and you're probably way too young to say a first single you ever bought. So first piece of music you remember getting, really falling in love with. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a single. Actually.
Was it?
Yeah. I'm 33. I was 33 yesterday, so I just came around. I came at the end of the CD era, and it was Samantha Mumba's "Gotta Tell You." I was obsessed with Samantha Mumba. I think I was 9, and we went into HMV, and I begged my mom to get him because I have two other sisters.
Older or younger?
I'm the middle. So I have an older brother as well. And then there's three of us. She thought it would be a good one to go all around. And we're all obsessed with her. Like that, like she had a pink top in the music video and jeans, and we just thought she was the coolest person ever. And also, I was really proud of my choice. Like years later, I think she did MasterChef Ireland recently. And she was just so lovely and so good at cooking as well. I was like, you are a great role model to have.
Let's hear a little bit of Samantha Mumba's "Gotta Tell You." Like it?
Oh, love it. Absolute banger. Yeah. Good choice, I feel.
Okay, so Louise Nealon is with us for the Culture Club, and let's move on to your favourite album. This is an interesting one. You've picked an album from way before you were born.
Yeah, so the album I picked is Joni Mitchell's Live at Canterbury House. It's it was recorded in 1967. And I found it in a record shop, like a secondhand record shop, and brought it home. Paid a lot of money for it, but it's relatively new. I think it's been kind of re-recorded, and I love listening to it because I love Joni Mitchell. She's one of those artists that I didn't completely get. Her music till I read a bit of her life and her interviews. And I'm like that with a couple of artists. I'm like that with Leonard Cohen. I'm like that with, like, Bob Dylan. And I think that Joni Mitchell exists in that category, with Patti Smith as well. I'm a huge fan of Patti Smith. And the reason why I love this album is because she's 24 and she's so wise. She wrote Both Sides Now when she was 21, and she was married at the time, and her husband kind of, they existed in a a folk singing duo, and a record company were interested in them and asked if they had any songs of their own. They were doing covers, and the husband was just like, no, don't tell them about that song, because what would you know about life? You're only 21 and you've written this like song about life and the big stuff. And and then when it was recorded years later with her mature voice, it's just so profound. And she's so charming and feminine and powerful in her youth. The album was recorded before Blue. So the songs that she's singing are really strange. There's one song called Dr. Junk, and it's about a dentist who is a hoarder, and so the people who go to him pay for their dentistry in like rusty things, so they give him rusty things in order to perform dentistry work, and she's just so funny and makes people laugh. Another person who does that is Lisa O'Neill. I really love Lisa. Going to a Lisa O'Neill gig is just so good for the soul, because she...
We'll play a bit of music, because Joni Mitchell comes up so often in Culture Club, and that album Blue has been nominated countless times. But let's hear Both Sides now from Live at Canterbury House.
Great. Well, we're looking at two sides to some things, and I'd like to close this set with a song called From Both Sides Now. And flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done. Clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all. And dunes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way you feel as every fairy.
Ah, the wonderful Joni Mitchell. What a shame we have to move on to other things in the time. You've given us a great list of favourite bands. You just couldn't narrow it down to one.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I understand that. And a great variety going back as far as the 1970s. Tell us your choices.
Oh, God, I can't really remember them now. I wish I had them in front of me.
Okay, I'll tell you what you put down the list for us. Everything from Thin Lizzy to Meatloaf from the 70s, Cat Stevens, Nina Simone, going back further, Tracy Chapman, real 1980s music, yeah. Lisa O'Neill, who you mentioned, Eminem, Billie Eilish and C-Mat more regularly. Where'd you get into Thin Lizzy?
Oh, God, I love Thin Lizzy. I think it must have been from my dad. I kind of went a roundabout way to having the same taste in music as my dad. When he used to put things on, I'd be like, oh, God, here we go. Like, I never really got Neil Young or Cat Stevens or even Leonard Cohen until I really believe, like, you come to a stage and there's different stages and different things for each stage in your life that responds to you. And Meatloaf is another one. I remember we had a 70s night in our local GAA, Kappa. And my dad did Meatloaf, an impression of him.
Like full bat out of hell, was it?
Full, it was like 7 minutes.
Oh, it's no, like 8 minutes
eight
at
minutes
least,
long, yeah.
Yeah,
like complete with like the air, like motorcycle.
He's going to love you telling that story.
But the older I got, the more I really, really, I think that album is absolutely genius. And same with Thin Lizzy. Like when I finished the draft of Snowflake, my first draft, I printed it off with and I played The Boys Are Back in Town and just danced around the kitchen. So yeah, quite an eclectic mix there.
We have a bit of Thin Lizzy. It's not The Boys Are Back in Town, which is wonderful, but it's also the brilliant Whiskey in the Jar. That's Thin Lizzy and Whiskey in the Jar. Best gig that you were ever at, Louise. And this one actually was one I was at as well, back in May 2016 in Croke Park.
Yes. So I went to Bruce Springsteen with my dad. I'm actually just realising now that a lot of my musical picks are based around memories with my dad. Bruce Springsteen is another one that he kind of he was always playing and singing. My dad is fond of a sing song, so he sings The River. I'm making him out as this like showman, but he's really
he moves from Meatloaf to doing The River by Bruce Springsteen.
He's actually a dairy farmer. but I remember that gig so well. Because I just couldn't get over the joy, the pure joy. And when I'm having a bad day, I kind of put on a Bruce Springsteen concert on. There's a song of his, Waiting on a Sunny Day.
Oh yeah.
And that's just like pure, like just lift the mood.
But that's not the one we have. But we have something from him in Croke Park, Back in Your Arms. Springsteen, who puts on a wonderful show, as he will do when he's back in Ireland again this year. We've got to take a break. Louise Nealon is with us, the author of Snowflake, and she will be back with the rest of the Culture Club after this. Welcome back. Louise Nealon is with us, the author of Snowflake, which is the One Dublin One book title for 2024. And as it happens, when we ask for favourite movies, you say you love movie adaptations of classic books. And you've gone for Pride and Prejudice from 2005. Tell us about this version.
Yeah, this is a controversial choice because I think most people love the BBC version. I completely fell in love with this film adaptation. Keira Knightley stars in it, and Matthew McFadden.
From Succession,
Succession, I remember watching Succession and being like, oh God, this is so jarring because he's not my Mr. Darcy in this. He's the opposite. But it's my comfort watch. I adore the book, of course I do. And Jane Austen is a genius. She's my Shakespeare, hands down. She's just she's such a massive cornerstone of storytelling. And what Joe Wright has done with the film adaptation is just incredible.
We have a clip where Keira Knightley is Elizabeth Bennet, Matthew McFadyen is Mr. Darcy, and Dame Judi Dench plays Lady Catherine de Bourgh. This is a scene from Pride and Prejudice, directed by Joe Wright.
Play the pianoforte, Miss Bennet.
A little, ma'am, and very poorly.
Oh. You draw?
No, not at all.
Your sisters, do they draw?
Not one.
It's very strange. I suppose you had no opportunity. Your mother should have taken you to town every spring for the benefit of the masters.
I'm sure my mother wouldn't have minded, but my father hates town.
Has your governess left you?
We never had a governess.
No governess? 5 daughters brought up at home without a governess. I never heard such a thing.
Hmm.
Your mother must have been quite a slave to your education.
Not at all, Lady Catherine.
Your younger sisters, are they out in society?
Yes, ma'am, all.
All? But all 5 out at once? Oh, that's very odd. And you only the second. The younger ones out before the elders are married. Your youngest sisters must be very young.
Yes, my youngest is not 16. But I think it would be very hard on younger sisters not to have their share of amusement because the elder is still unmarried. It would hardly encourage sisterly affection.
Upon my word, you give your opinion very decidedly for so young a person. Pray, what is your age?
With 3 younger sisters grown up, your ladyship can hardly expect me to own to it.
No Mr. Darcy in that clip.
So much more than Mr. Darcy.
Okay. Favourite play or musical or theatre show? You've given us something entirely different.
Yeah. Ballet.
Really?
I'm a huge fan of ballet. I danced ballet when I was younger. Was lucky enough to get lessons. And it's something that moves me to tears.
Why?
It's such an amazing art form in that it's so brutal on someone's body. It's really unnatural to dance that way, to have your body in those positions. It's nearly like entering the army, going into a dance troupe. And there's so many physical and emotional and psychological barriers for that person to get on stage and deliver a performance. And it's just so, like, the orchestra in the pit, the dancers responding to live music, the storytelling aspect, everything comes together. I remember when I was living in Belfast, I used to get the cheap ticket behind a pillar at the Grand Opera House, and I'd just crane my neck looking at all the different ballets that came around. And it's absolutely, like, a dream of mine is to go and see a Russian ballet. But I'm just so, I'm it.
What have
I'm
you
just
seen?
So it makes me speechless. Like, I can't describe how much it means to me, especially because it was such a big part of my childhood as well. It taps into a part of my life that I love.
I see you've described Swan Lake as your favourite by a country mile.
By a country mile, in a very culty way.
Okay.
Cultured.
Let's go to books. And your favourite book or author, you have gone for the Neapolitan novels by Elena Ferrante,
yes. She's an interesting character in that it's a pseudonym. Nobody knows who she is.
Yeah.
And those novels are mind-blowingly good.
Why? What is it about them?
they're like what happens when Jane Austen gets really angry. I remember seeing that on a blurb before. So that's not mine. That's somebody else's. I forget who it was that said it. It's four stories, four novels, but the author describes it as one long story. And it's about two women, Leela and Elna, and five decades of their friendship. And it's such an intense relationship. Their relationship to each other changes over the years, obviously, and also to other people. It's set in Naples, on the outskirts of Naples, in a kind of deprived area. There's poverty. There's an awful lot of politics in the novel. It's set in the 1950s. And it's a story that you can just completely lose yourself in.
Let's hear a little bit from the from My Brilliant Friend, the first one of the series by Elena Ferrante.
It's been at least 3 decades since she told me that she wanted to disappear without a trace. And I'm the only one who knows what she means. She never had in mind any sort of flight, a change of identity, the dream of making a new life somewhere else. And she never thought of suicide, repulsed by the idea that Rena would have anything to do with her body and be forced to attend to the details. She meant something different. She wanted to vanish. She wanted every one of her cells to disappear, nothing of her ever to be found. And since I know her well, or at least I think I know her, I take it for granted that she has found a way to disappear, to leave not so much as a hair anywhere in this world.
Okay. Television. This is where we ask you to do what you did with music and Samantha Mumba. What do you remember from your childhood which was formative on television?
Yes. So I really think that heaven is sitting in your pajamas, eating Cocoa Pops, watching cartoons. And if it's not, I'll be very disappointed. So the first program that I remember watching is Sesame Street, but I don't really remember an awful lot of it. It was brief, didn't last very long. I think my sisters and I, there's three of us, we have an older brother, and we kind of showed him affection, or like showed our love by loving what he loved on the TV. So he loved the Simpsons, he loved Pinky and the Brain, and he also loved wrestling. And we didn't have the channel, thank God, because we would have been beaten up a lot more. But we used to go to our neighbours to watch the WWE wrestling. And my brother Michael and our neighbour Brian used to practice their moves on us, and we'd love it because it meant that we were hanging out with the cool guys. But yeah, I really have really fond memories of watching telly as
and the Den I have in your
yeah like the Den is
Ian now or Ray.
So we had no. I was past Ian. It was Ray. Yeah. It's very odd growing up and then going into a studio with Ray Darcy standing there like the guy from your childhood telly and
also
his hand.
From Kildare.
Yeah.
And your current love, I believe, is Taskmaster.
I love Taskmaster. It's tapping into that child within yourself. I don't know how people go home and watch the news. I need to stick on something that completely distracts me from what's going on sometimes. And it's just being a big kid. It's comedians being a big kid and being creative. And yeah, I think I got into it during lockdown, and we did our own version of it over Zoom with the family. So it's just playing.
Well, let's hear a clip from season 4 where we have Lolly Adefope and Hugh Dennis and Noel Fielding and Mel Goodrick and Joe Lycett. And the task was to make the most exotic sandwich they could think of. And after they made the sandwich, they didn't know the next part of the challenge was to eat what they had made.
Make the most exotic sandwich.
You have 10 minutes to plan your exotic sandwich.
Then 10 minutes to construct it. Your time starts now.
Right. What do you think exotic means?
That to me says maybe fillings that have never been seen in a sandwich before.
Okay. So what I would like, please, is some Moroccan flatbread.
Turkish delight. That's very exotic.
Get me some wholemeal bread and maybe some pita bread as well. Wholemeal, though, I'm not an idiot.
So I need a kumquat, Greg's sausage roll.
Kiwi fruit.
Let's go all sweet. Mm. Heck, everyone's going to go savoury, aren't they?
Some smoked trout.
Then a crunchy bar, then a Kit Kat, then a double-decker.
Oh, a yam. Tequila. Some tequila.
What they eat in France? Croissants.
OK, I'll go shopping.
OK.
Shall I come with you?
No, thank you.
Do you need money?
No.
OK. Bag for life.
See you later.
Taskmaster. To finish out, you have given us a cultural buried treasure which we definitely have never had from any of our previous guests, Louise. You are recommending stained glass.
Stained glass, yes. So I got into stained glass quite recently. I was in a church, in a cathedral actually, in Dundalk. And it was around St. Bridget's Day, and I went in to light a candle, and there was no one else in the church, and I heard birds, and I looked up, and there was birds, silhouettes behind the stained glass, and that's the first time I actually noticed stained glass. And so I got really, it was beautiful, it was something that I'll never forget, so I got really into it. I tried to find like more contemporary examples because it's more fun. I mean, like dead stained glass artists are wonderful. I love Evie Hone and Wilhelmina Geddes. Obviously Harry Clark, and I went to a symposium on stained glass, and I was the only one there who didn't know anyone because it's all very, everyone knows each other. But there's a Scottish stained glass artist called Pinky McClure, and she was a musician for years, and she got into making stained glass just to make some money. But then she got really frustrated because she just thought, like, she could do so much more with it. And so she did, and she's become a magnificent stained glass artist. She has her work in galleries now. There's a current exhibition over in London. I really recommend anyone who's listening, go to Instagram, type in Pinky McClure, or just Google it. Pinky McClure is her name. Pink with an IE at the end of it. And you'll thank me later. It's absolutely phenomenal work.
I've really enjoyed meeting you. Louise Nealon, thank you so much for being with us for the Culture Club. And Louise's novel for the One Dublin One book selection is Snowflake.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.